For some former Eagles, this time of year brings back some bad memories. Following their Super Bowl 39 loss to the Patriots, many speculated Donovan McNabb and Terrell Owens would be right back on the big stage. But you remember that offseason? Finger pointing, blame, turmoil, and a T.O. driveway press conference? The Eagles didn't even make the playoffs the next year. And Donovan McNabb knows why.
That was something that kind of broke us up. That was the most frustrating for me because I knew what we could do, and if we decided to just come together, what we'd be able to accomplish.
You and T on talking terms, or what's the relationship like now?
Hey, I give a nice peace sign and keep it moving. You know, I respect his time. You know, I love my time. You know, and there's no need for me to try to dust off anything that happened in the past, because what was in the past is in the past.
Well, that ignited this. T.O. responding to the clip by tweeting, "Oh, expletive, I can't wait to tell my story. I'm bringing popcorn. I'm doing sit-ups. I'm going to eat a couple cans of chunky soup. This guy's a joke, talking about I broke up the Eagles. Did you tell him that you vouched for the Eagles to pay Westbrook, but
what?
Not me? It's on."
Oh, what?
Well, lucky,
oh.
Lucky us, what? Because the aforementioned Westbrook is sitting to my right.
How did I get in that?
I thought he was talking about Russell Westbrook. Now I'm really excited. All right.
This makes it even more convenient.
Absolutely.
What was your reaction to how all that went down?
Well, first of all, and listen, these are two guys, and I love Donovan. I've known him for a very long time, and T.O. is a really good friend of mine as well. So to see these guys still feuding about something that happened in 2004, 2005, to me, it's disappointing because I thought they had moved way past this years ago, and I think for it to continue to come up, it's just disappointing to see two of my guys that I respect and two of the best players that I ever played with still arguing about whose fault it is and things like that. Here's my opinion, quite honestly. I think that T.O. signed a contract before he came to Philadelphia his last year in San Francisco. He wanted that thing to be guaranteed the last couple years in Philadelphia. And Joe Banner had the opportunity to say, okay, T.O., you broke your leg, you came back, you played in the Super Bowl and you balled out. You were the best wide receiver in the game all year long. We're going to just guarantee the last 2 years. We don't have to fight about it. We won't have to discuss anything. And at that point, Donovan doesn't have to go vouch for this guy and that guy. And, you know, I think if I'm Donovan, you know, he probably felt, well, you see T.O.'s work. You see what he's done. Why does anybody need to vouch for him? His word, Donovan's word, wouldn't have helped T.O. at all. The stats, the numbers say everything that you need to see. He was the best receiver in the game. They should have guaranteed the contract, and I think that's the one thing that T.O. was waiting for. Joe Banner didn't do that. So me, I don't put blame on Donovan for that. I put more blame on Joe Banner for not guaranteeing the last 2 years because we had a great nucleus of guys. We talked about how small the window is when we talked about Patrick Mahomes and Andy Reid. Those windows close very quickly. You have to make the most of your team. We had a great team, and to that same thought, I thought we were there in the Super Bowl in 2004. We just returned the next year. A lot of crazy things happened. We didn't go back to the NFC Championship game back to until 2008.
But here's the other thing I'll say, and obviously you've lived it. You're the expert. This is me watching from afar. And I know T.O. I've talked with T.O. on and off the air. I thought T.O. having to wait on the Hall of Fame was a travesty.
It's a joke.
I think he is, by any measure, one of the five greatest receivers of all time. By any measure. And you could argue even higher than that, right?
I would say top three in my mind.
You certainly could make that argument. And so I have total respect for what he accomplished on the field. But if I'm the quarterback of a team, and there is someone that I need to vouch for, whether it will help or not, it is not just about production. It is about, what is your track record? What is your history? How good of a teammate you are? When you leave here eventually, are you going to start crushing folks, as is your history? It is a no-brainer I vouch for Brian Westbrook over Terrell Owens. There is a reason that certain guys continue on a path of why is everyone against me? And certain guys continue everywhere they go to be, oh my God, I didn't know Brian. I didn't know Brian a year ago.
Right.
And now if someone asks me about him, I'm like, oh, man, that is a great dude. It's a pleasure to be around, reliable, all these things. And so there has been, and I know he'll get mad, but it's the truth. And I tell him this, a lack of self-awareness for Terrell Owens. Sometimes the whole world's against you, but sometimes you bring some of it on yourself.
And sometimes that line gets cloudy because you keep putting it out there that the whole world is against you and people start seeing.
And I just, and I happen to think, maybe I'm wrong, if his exit in San Francisco was a little different, and if the way, because nobody questioned how tough he is or how great of a player he was, if he comported himself a little bit different, if they would have been more willing to guarantee that money. Because, of course, it came down to money. It always comes down to money, especially when you play in a Super Bowl on a broken damn leg and you play great and you say, I put myself out there for risk with no money guaranteed, now guaranteed. I get why he was angry about it, but as is often the case, he turned to me, Brian, a rightful gripe into something where he turns into the bad guy because of how he responded to it. And this is another instance. Donovan didn't have to say the things he said, right, but they weren't out of bounds. But then T.O. comes over with an over-the-top hammer, not just the tweet with your name, but other tweets involved. And again, we're talking about, why is he acting like this?
I hate seeing these guys. Again, I love these guys. I hate seeing them do that, especially over Twitter. These guys see each other from time to time at Super Bowls, at different events. They certainly have the opportunity to kind of clear the air, and I thought it was clear. I just wish they can come back together because, again, we're talking about two of the best players in Philadelphia Eagles history, and now they're feuding over on Twitter. That just doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah, but do you think it's going to happen?
No, it won't. It won't. It won't happen. But it should. I'll tell you what, one of the most disappointing things in my career as a player is that I wasn't old enough and mature enough to bring two guys that I know we needed to be successful together. And, you know, it was a point. I love T and I love Don. I couldn't bring them together for the success of our team. That's one of the biggest failures that I had in my career as a player. I wasn't old enough, wasn't mature enough at the time.
Thanks for sharing that.
TurboTax is here to help this tax season by making tax filing easier for you. They've made it their mission to give you all the tools and advice you need to get your taxes done with confidence, like making uploading your W-2 as easy as taking a picture. Just use your phone or tablet to simply snap a picture of your W-2, then watch your information appear in the right place in your tax return. You can be sure you're filing your taxes correctly while at the same time making sure you're getting the best possible refund. TurboTax, all people are tax people.
Here, first things first, we are just barely by about that much joined by Super Bowl champ
what
Chris
up, man?
Kenny.
What's up, man?
So we just peel back the curtain for a second. He sat down, no joke, about a fraction of a second before we
Which
came back on
Which never happened. Kenny's been on the show 300 times.
Right.
It's never been anything but early.
Is it a good story?
Yeah, because I'm usually on Tom Coughlin time, right?
Yeah.
You got to be five minutes early in order to be on time.
Yep. Yeah.
If you're on time, you're actually late.
Yeah. So.
But I can blame the George Washington Bridge for that this
well,
morning.
Well, see, there you go. I
got
it. Ain't going to happen when you get that penthouse in the city you've been talking about, bro. Come on.
There you go, man.
I'm just telling you, it's just another reason. Come on, move.
Listen, man,
town.
I'm just like George and Weezy. I want to move up to that deluxe apartment in the sky.
Yeah.
Kenny, let's talk about your guy. After 16 seasons, 2 Super Bowl wins, 2 Super Bowl MVPs, Eli Manning has decided to hang up the cleats. The Giants quarterback will hold a press conference tomorrow to officially announce his retirement. The 39-year-old steps away holding almost every passing record in team history. Kenny, you played 4 seasons with Eli. You won your Super Bowl 46 ring with Eli. Is he a Hall of Famer?
There's no question in my mind he's a Hall of Famer, Jenna. And I know a lot of people will point to the iconic moments that he had in Super Bowl 42 and Super Bowl 46. The throw to David Tyree, the helmet catch, which set up the Plaxico Burress go-ahead touchdown. And then, of course, the throw to Mario Manningham in Super Bowl 46 right along the sideline in between 2 Patriots defensive backs. I mean, B-Dub, you played in the league a long time. You know how hard it is to drop that ball into the receiver under those circumstances with that amount of pressure. But Eli Manning has always been able to deliver, especially when the lights are the brightest and the pressure is the greatest. And to me, competitive greatness has to account for something. You look at those 2 Super Bowl runs. I mean, those were awesome runs. He was on the road for all of the games during the Super Bowl 42 run, on the road for 3 of the 4 games in Super Bowl 46. Everybody looks at those big moments in the Super Bowl, but if you go back to 2011 and you look at the NFC Championship game where Eli Manning took an absolute beating against the San Francisco 49ers. I think they sacked him 6 times, over 20 pressures, but he had over 30 completions in that game. And of course, he delivered when it mattered the most. So for me, you can look at the metrics, and Eli Manning is in top 10 of a lot of statistical categories as far as passing goes. But when you actually look at what he did and what he meant for the Giants organization, I mean, you'd be hard pressed to find anybody that did it better.
What was he like as a teammate?
Well, I mean, he was the consummate professional. I mean, he was, and I know it's cliche, but he was the first one in the building, last one to leave, and he went about his business in a very workmanlike fashion. You had no choice but to respect Eli and how he went about doing what he does. But the thing about it that makes it special is just the level of consistency, because he was the same guy every day. And especially when you talk about a city like New York, when you're under a microscope and there's a lot of scrutiny, whether he played well, whether he played bad, he was steady. And I think that that gave the team, that ability to be consistent. And I think that's a special characteristic, especially playing in this town.
The people that would say that Eli's not a Hall of Famer will say that he was never the best at his position. His best 5-year span, 11 through 15, he ranked 19th in passer rating, 20th in completion, and 15th in wins. However, when I look at Eli, I look at the totality of his career. I say playing 16 years and putting up the type of numbers over 50,000 yards, over 300 touchdowns, those are Hall of Fame numbers. Those are Hall of Fame credentials. And being able to play, and you mentioned it, being able to play in certain cities with the type of media scrutiny that you get here in New York, it's just hard to do, especially with some of the teams, the ups and downs that you've had in the city. So I certainly think that Eli is a Hall of Famer. But you made a point, and I think people need to understand this. The ability to play at a high level for a long time is just hard. There's not very many people that can say, I'm going to come to work every single day and I'm going to be the best every single day. Eli was never quite the best. However, he was consistent, to your point, then his entire career. He was very good. And I think because of that, he should be rewarded with the Hall of Fame.
Never missed a game due to injury.
It's impressive.
The Iron Man streak that was prematurely ended with the Geno Smith start a few years ago by McAdoo is a part of the resume as well. I'm going to approach this from a slightly different angle because I knew this question was coming as soon as it came out yesterday, the retirement was coming. And I take these things probably more seriously than I should. And Eli is, I've said before on the show, you can make as strong of a case for as you can against. But I wanted to really like dive into it and figure out how do I really feel? And I'm not going to use the 50,000 passing yards. I'm not going to use the top 10 in touchdowns or top five, all those things, because I think the statistical argument in its totality actually works against him a bit, because never first-team All-Pro, no MVP, you know what I mean? Never had, statistically, regular season stats. He was a good quarterback, not a great quarterback. So how do you overcome that and become a Hall of Famer? With two of the most iconic, not games, but to your point, runs in playoff history. And that is the part that to me was the final check mark in the, you know what? Eli Manning is a Hall of Famer in my mind, because it's not just that he beat the 18-0 Patriots. It's that 2 rounds prior, he knocked out the best Tony Romo team we ever saw, the 13-3 Dallas Cowboys. You were on that team. The round after that, he knocked out Brett Favre's Green Bay Packers. The last time Favre had a chance to win or go to a Super Bowl with the Packers, the 13-3 Packers, and then the 18-0 Patriots. On that playoff run, he had 6 touchdowns, 1 pick, and a 96 rating. And then 4 years later, what was the route? You guys knocked out the 15-1 Packers, unanimous MVP Aaron Rodgers. Then you knock out a dominant 13-3 San Francisco 49er team in a game, like you said, he got whooped in. Mm-hmm. He got beat up en route to beating the 13-3 Patriots. On that playoff run, 9 touchdowns, 1 pick, a 103 rating. And I think it's very telling. Eli and his brother both have 2 rings. Everyone knows Peyton's one of the all-time greats. But en route to those rings, how did they play? En route to those championships, who was better? Because when we talk about those Super Bowls, we say, oh, your guys' defensive line. That's Eli, his 8 playoff games the years they won the Super Bowl. 15 touchdowns, 2 picks, 100 rating. That's Peyton, the 2 years he won the Super Bowl. It's not just the Broncos year. That includes his Super Bowl with the Colts. 5 touchdowns, 8 picks, a 72 rating. He was, as great as he was in the playoff run, he was along for the ride. Eli, once the playoffs began, those 2 years, and maybe the only 2 moments of his career, he was the best guy. He was as great as your guys' D-line was, as great as those things were. He was the driving offensive force. And if you're going to overcome, to me, what is a good but not great regular season career, you have to be able to have that up there. Twice, I was nails in the biggest moments, and I didn't get an easy path. I was against 13-3, 13-3, 15-1, 13-3, and he did it. So I'm surprised I'm saying it, but after looking into it, I think he's got to be a Hall of Famer, can't he?
The other thing that he has as a feather in his cap is that he has 2 Super Bowl MVPs. Yeah. Ain't a whole lot of guys walking around with multiple Super Bowl MVPs. 1 of 5, and if you look at the majority of those guys on that list, they in Canton. So, I mean, it seems like it's inevitable that Eli Manning will be putting on a gold jacket.
All right, quickly, does his career record bother you guys that he finishes
the Well, again, the 170 and 117, the lack of MVPs, lack of all pros, all that works against him. You have to have a giant trump card to overcome it.
And that's
I think
enough.
Those 2 Super Bowl runs, not just beating the Patriots, the teams you had to beat on the road in order to get them, I think
playing
it does.
Playing in New York helps him, too, a little
Do you see what I'm saying? He makes such a case. I'm always convinced after Nick speaks.
He's a lawyer.
Part-time. Good. He's a great lawyer. Guys, a little in or out. Here we go. After 16 seasons and 2 Super Bowl MVPs, Giants quarterback Eli Manning will announce his retirement at a press conference tomorrow. Brian Westbrook, you in or out on Eli being a Hall of Famer?
I'm in. I think Eli has a longevity, 16 years. I think the numbers, over 50,000 yards, over 300 touchdowns, say that he's a Hall of Famer. He wasn't the best he had in any single year. But when you talk about a collection of a career, which to me, which makes a Hall of Famer, I think Eli, his numbers speak for themselves.
Yeah, Eli Manning's a Hall of Famer. I think he's a lock. I mean, I mentioned it before. Only 5 guys with multiple Super Bowl MVPs. Joe Montana, Bart Starr, Terry Bradshaw in Canton. Tom Brady will be in Canton. And then Eli Manning's name is on that list.
Listen, I have been on the fence on this for a long time, but once he retired, I knew I was going to have to come up with my actual opinion on it. So after doing probably more time thinking about this and looking at the numbers than I should, he's a Hall of Famer. It is, you can, if you just base it on regular season numbers, you can make a very strong case for him because of the totality of the numbers, but you can also make a very strong case against him because he was never one of the 3, maybe never even one of the 5 best quarterbacks in any given season. However, not just these 2 games against the Patriots, but the 8 playoff games and those playoff runs where he had 15 touchdowns, 2 picks, a 101 rating despite being the underdog in damn near every one of those games, that's enough to put you over the top. And I give him a little extra credit. Archie's kid, Peyton's little brother, and didn't let that crush him. That would have crushed a lot of people, especially in New York City. He lived up to it. Hall
Good
of Famer.
Stuff. All right, Lamar Jackson might win MVP honors this season, but he isn't satisfied, saying, quote, I got to work on everything. I'm not the best. I'm not the greatest. Brian Westbrook, you in or out on Lamar making a leap as a passer from year 2 to year 3?
I'm in. In any part of your life, the first part of getting better is admitting that you need to get better. Lamar Jackson has just said, I want to be a better passer. He got much better from last year to this year. To me, that doesn't change. He continues to progress and get better. Humble kid. Every single step of the way, he's saying the right thing. He's doing the right thing in the offseason. I think he makes a big jump from year 2 to 3.
Yeah, B-Dub, I'm right there on that corner with you. Seeing what he did from year 1 to year 2, I think that display plays his sports character, and I believe he'll continue to work on his game and try to improve in the areas that he has deficiencies. I don't have any question that Lamar will do his part. The organization has got to do their part, and eventually they're going to have to win one of these playoff games where he's the starting quarterback.
Well, and he's going to have to play better in one of those playoff games for them to win. I'm out on him making a leap. I think the leap portion of his career was year 1 to year 2. I think he'll improve slightly. I think we're now to the gradient improvements, which is why I think it'll be a few years until Lamar is a truly accurate deep down the field passer. My guess is around the time that some of his athleticism wanes a bit, he overcomes it because his passing has become more refined enough. He's not a bad passer, but to me a leap would be, okay, he's not only the most deadly running quarterback, but he's also one of the most deadly passing quarterbacks. He's not that, and I don't think he'll be that in year 3.
All right, Stephen Jones says that Dak Prescott's contract is the team's number one priority this offseason, but there is a second option. So, Westbrook, you in or out on the Cowboys using the franchise tag on Dak Prescott?
I'm out. I think you add Mike McCarthy because you have faith in his ability to say he's going to make this team better. He's going to be able to improve Dak. I wish I had the numbers in front of me. How many teams have won with a quarterback on a franchise tag? I would probably think it's been very low. I want to make
won
sure.
Won a Super Bowl?
Yeah, won a Super Bowl. Won some playoff games. Won something that counts for anything. Yep. And this is that's the reason why I'm saying you got to pay the man and allow your team to move on. If you want to make this team better, you either got to pay him or move him out of there. But you're going to get someone else in. Don't mess around with the franchise tag.
Yeah, I'm out on the Cowboys franchise tag and Dak. They need to get a long-term deal worked out because they need to be able to manipulate the cap and spread some of the cap hit with the new extension that Dak Prescott is going to command. Because we came into last year saying the Cowboys were one of the most talented teams in the NFL. But when you have a talented team, of course, you got to pay all of those guys. And in order to keep those guys around for this 2 or 3 year window, you got to be able to spread that cap hit out. Franchise tag doesn't allow you to do that. That's $27, $28 million on your cap in 2020. Yep. And that makes it a lot harder to work out extensions for Cooper and for Byron Jones.
I'm in, despite Canny's totally correct, that there's no way to manipulate the cap in the front. Whatever that tag number is that hits your cap that year, he's absolutely right. I would rather swallow that pill than pay Dak what it looks like it is going to take to get him to sign a contract. Dak has made it very clear. He wasn't taking any type of discount. Looks like he wants to be one of the three highest paid players in football history. I think that would be a mistake. I would rather roll the dice with the franchise tag, see how he plays under McCarthy. See, the Jason Garrett excuse, I don't know if that was an excuse, but the Jason Garrett place to put the blame is now gone. If Dak and the Cowboys aren't much better next year, then you do start to look to the quarterback. I'd want the flexibility in case that happens, so I'm in on it.
By the way, Kirk Cousins missed the playoffs when he had the franchise tag on him those 2 years. He had made it the year prior when he was in Washington. Last night, we finally got the debut of 19-year-old phenom, projected superstar Zion Williamson. And after a very quiet first three quarters, he scored 17 straight points during a three-minute span in the fourth. He was then pulled with just over 5 minutes left in the game because he was on a minutes restriction. Pelicans would go on to lose to the Spurs. Here's Zion after the game on getting pulled.
It's very hard. I'm 19. Honestly, in that moment, I'm not thinking about longevity. I'm thinking about winning that game. So it was very tough. Me personally, I didn't want any restriction, but I'm not a doctor or a trainer, so I just got to listen to them.
Nick, do you think injuries are the only thing that can really keep Zion from being a Hall of Fame talent?
Oh, yeah, I'll take it a step further. Injuries are the only thing that will keep him from being an all-timer. And the NBA is a little different than the NFL. The NFL, if you are in the Hall of Fame, you are an all-timer.
Yes.
The NBA, all the players in the Hall of Fame are great, but there is a separate wing, at least in my brain, of the greatest of the great. Remember the NBA old top 50 list? I think they're going to come out with a 75th anniversary top 75 list. There are a lot of guys not included in that are in the Hall of Fame. Zion can be in one of those front rooms of that pyramid if he stays healthy. His floor is Blake Griffin. And I like Blake a lot. Blake has had an awesome career. Blake Griffin will be a Hall of Famer. That is not an insult to Blake. His ceiling is win a couple of MVPs. And he showed you last night, Brian, that I like that he made threes. I don't think he's going to be some knockdown shooter his rookie season. But what he showed you last night by taking those threes, by having the presence of the moment, was that, he also has that thing that I thought he had at Duke. I had every reason to believe he had at Duke, but it's college, so it's a little different, which is a feeling of the moment and what the greatest of the great have, which is, it's my time. And this is a big moment for me, so I need to live up to the quality of the moment for me. I watched Kevin Durant in his final game ever in Seattle, his rookie season. People forget, Durant was drafted by the Seattle Supersonics around the age Zion was, 1 year in college. And you saw him have this unbelievable career at the University of Texas. And the fans were, if I'm remembering it exactly correct, they were trailing in the fourth quarter. The fans were upset because the team's leaving. And KD is a 19-year-old kid, not only channels the moment, but gets the crowd involved, hits big shots, doing the Save Our Sonics thing. And at that moment, I'm like, oh, this guy, in addition to having all the tools he had, he's special. And Zion took him 14 minutes to figure it out. And then in that burst in the fourth quarter, it's like, okay, everything I wanted to believe about him, to me, he confirmed last night. The only thing that can derail him is injuries, which is why the knee was so concerning when it happened before the year even started. But I mean, he checks every box you want for the next great NBA superstar.
One of the things I hate about our superstars, and this is our business that we're in, is that we're trying to put these this guy that's played one game in his professional career in the Hall of Fame box already. And I think when you talk about his talent, you talk about how exciting, how athletic, the smile, how charismatic he is, obviously he has the ability to make it to the Hall of Fame. He has a long way to go. Here's a couple things that I loved about what happened last night and to kind of show. First, he said, Canty mentioned it earlier, after the game, I love what I was able to do, but I wanted to win the game. That's the most important thing. The second thing is that he has a bunch of vets around him that are vested in him maturing and be better because they understand, even though Ingram has been going off, even though Ball has played very well, Drew Holiday has done a great job, they understand if this guy gets on the right track, then this team takes the next, goes to the next level, competes for that 8th seed, maybe the 7th seed in their conference. And the last thing was, when they're at that press conference, there was a reason why Drew Holiday was sitting beside Zion. Yes. Because he wanted to make sure that this 19-year-old was leading and going in the right direction. When you have vets that kind of want to shape your future and you are as athletic and exciting as he is, it's hard to not be on that same type of Hall of Fame pathway that I think he is on already.
And I think the NBA needed an injection of someone like Zion this season. We don't have the exact same storylines we had last year. He is all of that wrapped up in one, as you said, charismatic individual. It's must-see TV. You're going to watch him play.
And two other notes quickly. One is this. I understand basketball analytics as well as just about anybody. I get why the game has become three-pointers and layups, why the mid-range game is gone, why people, you are incentivized to find the next Steph Curry more so than just about anything else. I get it. It ain't great for the game. What makes basketball so aesthetically appealing and the most beautiful game of all the games to me, as far as just watching it from afar, is you've got this almost ballet going on with freak show athletes. We needed another freak show athlete in this league. We needed another guy who's not only bigger and stronger and who is that, but can jump higher. The ability to momentarily fly is what differentiates basketball players from all the other sports. And it doesn't make them better or worse, it's just different. And the league has incentivized finding guys who can shoot from 35 feet. And I love Trey. And Luke is obviously my young adult Slovenian son. I love their games. They can't get you out your seat the way this kid's going to be able to. And I know it's premature, and we always want to say, is Patrick Mahomes a Hall of Famer? Is this guy? In basketball, you can sometimes see it when they're 17.
Yeah.
And because there's less of a risk of catastrophic injury than football, you're less dependent on your teammates than in football. Guys that are 99 out of 100 on potential, usually, occasionally there's a Derek Coleman, usually they hit. And I can't wait to watch him. I can't wait to watch him fly up and down the court, almost literally.
Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern.